Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. My guest for this morning is New York Times and USA Today best-selling author Susan Mallory. Susan and I will be discussing about her latest novel titled Barefoot Season. It is about the life of Michelle, an Army veteran returning home after tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, only to find out everything have changed. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. I'm excited to have you on. Barefoot Season is a wonderful read. It addresses many of the issues our current veterans faces as the war winds down overseas. It's very well written, so congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I think there's a lot of attention paid to the male soldiers returning home, but not so much to the women, and so I appreciated the opportunity to be able to explore that a little bit.
Wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
I'm never sure how much detail. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, which means I mostly the San Fernando Valley, so I can use the word like as a noun, a verb, or an adjective. So he was like going to the mall. I was always a reader. I don't remember when I wasn't reading, but I didn't know you could be a writer. For some reason, as I grew up, I thought if you were going to be a writer, you had to live in France and wear turtlenecks and smoke Galois cigarettes. And I don't speak French very well, and I don't like turtlenecks, and I've never smoked, so I felt the writing career was not for me. So I actually ended up studying accounting in college and was going
That's
to
boring.
Be an accountant. I know. And close to about a year and a half from graduation, I saw this class offered at a local adult education center, and it was how to write a romance novel. And I always loved romance. I read my first romance probably I was about 13. It was in a friend's rec room. They were her mother's, and I slipped one out unbeknownst to anyone and read it that night and returned it the next day, and I was hooked. They were old Harlequin Presents and Harlequin romances, and they were just spectacular. Anyway, I kept seeing this class offered, and it was at one of those places like where they teach calligraphy and aerobics, and and I thought, wow, this is like a regular person in the valley teaching about writing. So I decided to sign up for the class, and then thought, well, if I'm going to take this class, I had better start a book. So I started a book. It was horrible, but I didn't know that at the time. And about week six of this 8-week class, I thought, well, I don't want to be an accountant. I want to be a romance writer. So after graduation, I was writing and submitting, and I gave myself 2 years, basically. If I didn't sell in 2 years, I was going to have to go back and be an accountant. But I did sell, and that was like just over 20 years ago, and since then I've written about 120 novels. So it turned out to be a good decision.
That's fabulous. Wonderful story. Now, you talked about switching from accounting to writing. When did you actually sort of figure out that this is in my blood, this is what I like to do, and I just love writing?
I would say it was really in the middle of that class. I thought, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do with my life. And I was very fortunate living in Los Angeles. There's a lot of ways to study writing there. There's a lot of screenwriting classes, so I took don't want to write a screenplay, but they have excellent story structure. So I took a lot of screenwriting classes. UCLA has a whole writer's extension program. And I just studied, and I loved it. I worked, and I still work a lot. I think that's how you know when you found what you love, if you can put in a 12-hour day and at the end think, I loved today. I would say the worst day spent writing is still better than the best day spent doing anything else. So that's when you know you found your passion.
Well, you're a wonderful storyteller. Do you basically sort of daydream a whole lot and you sort of like fantasize things ought to be this way, that way, and so forth?
Most of that energy now goes towards the book. So what I have learned is I need quiet time and I need to be moving. I think I'm strongly kinetic. So I live in an urban area of Seattle and I can walk to the grocery store. So if I'm having a plot problem, I go buy some milk or something, because between walking to the store and walking back, I can probably solve my problem. I have friends who do the same thing with vacuuming, but I just think that's taking it too far. I am not going to vacuum.
No cleaning for you, right?
I do when I have to, when it gets really disgusting, but it's so infrequent the dog is totally freaked out. It's like, what's that? Oh, yeah, I remember now, but it's been weeks, so yeah.
What are some of the major influences that you encounter that really sort of grabs you and you write about it?
I don't tend to be influenced by events so much as feelings. When I start a book, there's a couple things I try to do. I look at what I want to talk about, because that's really what a book is for me. It's, you know, 500 pages of what is interesting, but it's mostly a feeling. And what's funny with this book, Barefoot Season, it originally started out to be something very, very different. There is a classic premise in, because in my other life I write romance novels, this is more a women's fiction, women's journey kind of book. And I thought, you know, one of the classic premises in romance is the woman gets left at the altar. Her fiancé sleeps with somebody else and she leaves him. And a lot of times it's the best friend. And I thought, we never talk about the best friend. And so I was talking to my agent about this, and she said, you need to read Emily Giffen's Something Borrowed, which they made into a cute movie. And I read the book, and I called her back, and I said, no, that's not what I want to do. So that was the original premise, that it was going to be this triangle of Michelle, her friend Carly, and the guy who sort of messed with both of them. That lasted for maybe 2 weeks, and then it became something completely different. We started... I started exploring Michelle as a returning Army veteran, and that really sent me in a completely different direction. I talked to service women, women who were in active duty, as well as women who had already left the service. And once I spoke to them, the whole book shifted.
That's very interesting. From reading your book, you did a thorough research about what you're writing, because you're very detailed on the things that woman goes through, war and afterwards and so forth. Like you had mentioned earlier in our conversation, a lot of times we talk about men coming back from war, and you have a wonderful twist about women. This is real life, real situation about the things that they go through. We're all human beings, so it doesn't matter whether you're male or female, we go through the same thing. So having that in mind, tell us a little bit more about Barefoot Season.
Well, the premise of Barefoot Season is it's about two friends, Michelle and Carly, and they were ripped apart by that guy who sort of did them both wrong. But Michelle left. The book takes place on a fictitious island called Blackberry Island. And she's been gone for 10 years, and she's served in the military, and now she's been injured. She was shot and had a partial hip replacement. And she's come home to reclaim her life, and part of her life is an inheritance with a, she owns the inn. And she, there's an interesting phenomenon I think every one of us has had at some point in our life. We know in our head when we go away, life goes on behind us, you know. People keep, kids keep growing up, things change, people paint their houses. Yet when we come back, we're always shocked that it's different. And so there's something inside of us that expects the world, if we're not in the room needs to stop living. and knowing in our head is very different than feeling it in our heart. And, you know, if anyone's ever gone to a reunion of any kind, there's always an element of, wow, look, everything's changed. And we know it would have changed, but we're still surprised. So Michelle has that when she goes home. It's been a decade. And everything is different. And what she wants most desperately is for everything to be the same. So that was really interesting to explore, because I think it is something we've all lived through in one way or another. One thing I try to do in the books is I think there needs to be a level of authenticity. Mm-hmm. Research is easy now. I love the internet. You can find out anything. But what's important for me is the emotional authenticity. Are these feelings
right.
real? So that's what I worked on the most with this, was getting her her emotional arc correct.
You're an excellent writer when it comes to moving someone's emotion with your writing. So with this particular one, which is totally different because it is not quite a romance novel, it is about friendship, healing, and forgiveness and so forth. And you talk about real life situations in the sense that, especially for Michelle going through the post-traumatic disorder, you know, mm-hmm. a trauma. And I thought you dealt with that very detailed. And so you did a wonderful job in terms of researching, and obviously you may have talked to several people in doing this. And of course, I'm sure it impacted you personally.
It did. I think that the people who choose to serve are extraordinary. And mm-hmm. I mean, we can all, again, think about it, but to actually do it, to remove themselves from their lives, to go somewhere completely different, especially to be sent to a war zone, and talking to the women about what it was like for them, and it is monotony and mm-hmm. extraordinary stress at the same time, which is mm-hmm. impossible to imagine. I can't figure it out unless, you know, you've been there. And one of the things a woman said to me, which I thought was very funny, a veteran, she's like, really, you have to put the spiders in there? Because apparently the camel spiders are really, really aggressive, and they're large, mm-hmm. and they're not like our spiders who run. They will come at you, but she's like, you know, you didn't have to talk about spiders when you were talking about the women. It's like, but the spiders are great. They added that touch.
Right.
So I think I was really moved by what they've gone through. And then so many of the women who return have families. They have children
yeah.
they have to come home to and become reacquainted with. And I toyed with that, but that was a bigger mess than I could handle. In
mm-hmm.
my editor would not have been happy if I turned in a 1,000-page novel. So I thought it was best that I don't.
Sure. Well, what you have done is sort of a beginning point, if that makes sense. Because I remember in reading your book, it reminds me of what my Italian foster mom told me about her husband coming home, my Italian foster father, that is, during World War II. He was with Patton 3rd Army, and after the war, when he came back, my mom saying, you know, Ben was never the same person that I married. Now, you, in writing a novel, from your perspective, from a woman's perspective, I'm sure as you encounter people that you talk to, gives you a totally different perspective about when you hear about things versus now you're in it and doing the research and really having a full grasp of the gravity of the situation, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. It's it does change everything. I don't do a lot of personal mm-hmm. interviews for what mm-hmm. I do. Mm-hmm. Mostly my research is about how to get the details right. I have a book coming out where the heroine raises goats, so I know mm-hmm. way too much about goats. But that's my normal process. This was something I couldn't relate to. I could relate to Carly, who's the friend. Mm-hmm. I could relate to being a single mom. I could relate to not having enough money mm-hmm. when I was on my own and trying to make it and mm-hmm. and young. There were weeks where the cat was the only one who got meat in the house, you know. Mm-hmm. I was living off noodles. Mm-hmm. I know what that feels like, but I don't know what it feels like to face a man with a gun, and I'm comfortable not knowing that. But so that was where it was very different kind of research, and it's extraordinary what they do, and I'm glad attention is being paid, because it should.
Well, you certainly did your fair part about it, because when you write about a novel like this, in the normalcy of living, coming back and obviously trying to run a business, and then you're fighting a different kind of war.
Yes.
And so that's quite fascinating in itself, because this is the real world that you're walking to. And actually, this war doesn't end because this is life.
It's true. It's true. And it's funny because the book Barefoot Season is the first book in an mm-hmm. ongoing series. Mm-hmm. So I just finished the second book, and Michelle has a small part in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun to go back. She's just as crabby as ever. And I thought, I love her so much.
Mm-hmm.
She was great, but she's exactly the same a year later. And I thought, mm-hmm. okay, I find that comforting. She's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But she will. This is who she will always be.
Right.
And it's funny because my husband is reading this book. He doesn't read a lot of my books. He reads some. But he's reading this one. He's like, she's very crabby. It's like, I know. Isn't that wonderful? And he's like, she's kind of scary. Whereas I adore her, but I know her. So
yeah.
I've heard you have to warm up to her. But
mm-hmm.
no, Michelle's one of my favorite characters ever. I really, really like her.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk about how do you choose the other characters in the book, because there's some interesting characters in there. So let's talk about that.
The other characters sort of grow from the premise. I have different mm-hmm. ideas, different things I want to do, and they sort of grow organically. So in this case, I knew I had Michelle and Carly, the friends,
mm-hmm.
and Carly has a daughter, Gabby. Gabby is a lot of fun, and she's around 10. Which is a great age. And I had a good time. I went onto Facebook and say, okay, those of you with 10-year-old daughters, what is she going to be into? Because it changes. What kids love changes every year. It's hard
mm-hmm.
to keep up. And then I knew the book took place at an inn, so I knew there would be a staff and there would be guests. And some of it is taken from life. One of the things that happens in the inn is there's a therapist couple who has retreats, and they do all these exercises, and that's from my life. My husband and I were staying somewhere, and I looked out the window of our room, and we were at the beach, and there were six couples standing on the sand doing this weird blindfold thing.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the couples, one of the partners was blindfolded. And they were being led around. And I'm like, what on earth are they doing? So I actually saw that and then went and asked at the front desk what was going on. And they said, oh, it's a therapy weekend. They do this all the time. And it's a trust. So I came home and started doing research on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I need a place to put this. And so I just set it aside. And then a couple years later, I was writing Barefoot Season. And I thought, oh, I can do my trust exercise. Because I just thought that was pretty interesting. So it grows from that, from life,
mm-hmm.
from what needs to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of men in the books. I am a romance writer at heart, so there will always mm-hmm. be a couple of men in the books.
That's interesting. Now, changing from being a romance writer, because this book basically took a different twist.
It did.
So how challenging was that for you to do so?
I've done a few women's fiction books, and
mm-hmm.
I enjoy writing them. It's about my women's fiction. All my books are about the same theme. If you look at your favorite writer and you read
mm-hmm.
a bunch of the books in a row, you will discover every writer has one theme he or she writes about over and over
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is about finding family. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's traditional family. Most
mm-hmm.
of the time it is not traditional family. And in this case, Michelle and Carly have to realize they are family. They are sisters
mm-hmm.
at heart. So I always write about finding family. The women's fiction is interesting because the focus is different. In a romance, their focus is on the couple getting together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a mystery. There's a journey. In a mystery, you have a dead body. Who killed the person? In a romance, you have a couple. How will they get together? But in women's fiction, it's about friendship, and friendship's very important to women. And as you know, women have different relationships with their friends than men do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I can spend all day with my girlfriends and then call one of them that night, and my husband looks at me, he's like, how can you have anything left to say? It's been the whole, what is left? And that's one of the differences. And I enjoy writing about women's relationships,
mm-hmm.
whether it's friendship. The last book I wrote for women's fiction was Mothers
mm-hmm.
and Daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fun one to explore. So we've all been, if we're women, we've been a daughter. Whether or not we've been a mother ourselves, we've all been daughters. So so I enjoy doing that, and that's one of the things I do differently in the women's fiction is focus on one or two aspects of the relationships that are most important to women.
Very true. the topics you chose are wonderful topics because I think it can relate to not only to just women but also to men, because especially in this particular book, there's a tremendous amount of emphasis on fear and love.
Yes.
So that is fascinating. So tell us more about that.
Well, the fear aspect came up with the Michelle being a soldier brings it more to the surface. But I think for everybody, regardless of gender, to live mm-hmm. authentically is terrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we pretend to be somebody else, we're safe. Because if we're rejected, it's never really us.
Mm-hmm.
But if we live authentically, then there's no filter. The pain is directed. If you know, and children go through this so much, especially today with all the bullying. I mean, it's hard for a child to be inauthentic. And so in the books, I like to explore different, and they just sort of grow, again, organically out of what's being dealt with. But there is a lot of fear in this. There's Carly's fear of being turned out of her, not just losing her job, but she lives on the property. So she loses her job and her home if she's turned away. And it's not like she's got any money. Michelle's afraid she'll never be normal again, that she can't find her way back. And she has quite a spiral. She has some serious PTSD, and she has to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And when you're someone like Michelle, asking for help is pretty much impossible. So that's between her. So I think, I mean, we're all afraid of different things at different times in our lives. And I think if a story can capture one element and make it real, then it's a journey that we can all relate to.
And the subtlety of love comes in play, because then with love, it seems to sort of put you in a different twist, because then it allows you to accomplish a lot more things.
Yes, I agree completely. And I like happy endings. I'm a big fan of the happy ending. I don't like the existential. It's all pointless. I mean, that just makes me insane. And I know years ago a book by a favorite author came out, and I read the prologue, and the woman mm-hmm. is hit by a car, and I thought, okay, and I've never done this before since, but I actually read the end. And mm-hmm. she died, and I thought, no, I am not going to spend 400 pages falling in love with this family only to have her die at the end. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't want that. I want her to recover and them to adopt a little baby or a puppy or something. I do not want this dead at the end thing. So mm-hmm. That's a personal thing. So I don't do that.
Interesting.
Well, no, once I did it, but not often.
Interesting. What would you like for your readers to gain from reading Barefoot Season?
Mostly what I want my readers to gain when they read my books is a really good time. To me, reading is about escape. And and so I think they'll enjoy it. I think it's emotional. It's funny. There are some very real aspects. But my goal is to always sweep my reader away, regardless of the subject matter. I want her to escape her, you know, her regular life, whatever's mm-hmm. going on that day. I want to take her away from it for a couple of hours.
Very interesting. How much of you is in the book?
It depends on the book. The characters are all different, but the women are mostly women I would like to know.
Mm-hmm.
My main characters are usually always somebody I'd like to be friends with, mm-hmm. Even though they're very different. I think my heroines tend to be mouthy and sarcastic, and I suspect they get that from me. and some of my hobbies pop up. In this book, Carly is an avid gardener,
mm-hmm.
and Michelle is not. And I am more Michelle than Carly. I have the black thumb of death when it comes to plants, so I try to stay. They actually recoil from me when I go to the home center. I can hear their little voices. Take her, don't take me. I'm young. I have a life. So there's a scene with some daisies. When you read the book, those of you who choose to read the book will see. I really enjoyed Michelle's attack on the garden. So there are little elements, but it's not my life is not interesting enough to be based on one book, let alone 100. So it's mostly imagination.
Interesting. Well, all you need is miracle growth now. You know that, right?
I've heard that, but I'm afraid. I mean, I can kill a terrarium. I just know. It's hard. It's just, plus, it's dirt. I mean, did anyone think that through? Grubbing in the... I have a friend who's a very spiritual writer, and I so admire her. Every spring at, I don't know, or summer at the solstice, I'm not clear on when, but she has this spot in her ground, and she cleanses the ground. I don't know how you cleanse dirt. And at the full moon, she lies naked in the earth and receives spiritual and creative energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and ew, I just can't even, it's like, okay, I'll just stay unclean and whatever, certified. But yes, every year she has this amazing ritual, and then she's perfectly cleansed and one with the universe. I'll just like have that, you know, a second glass of wine and call it a day. So we're very different.
Interesting. Since the book is set on Blackberry Island, you offered some collections of blackberry recipes, which I thought was very, very interesting. Please tell us more about that.
Well, there's I have learned over the years, make up your own setting because the freeway never goes where you need it to go. Mm-hmm. So I did set a fictitious island. It's in the Seattle area. I'm living in Seattle now, so it was it was fun to set a book here. The other series I write is set in California, so I thought it would be nice to set something in the Seattle area, and so I combined a couple of islands to make them what I want. And there is a website, blackberryisland.com, where you can read about the book, and the recipes are there. So some of the recipes I developed, I have an amazing assistant who developed some of the recipes as well, but they are blackberry-based. There's sauces and salads and even a cocktail. And both the husbands were getting last summer really tired of this whole blackberry thing. It's like, really? You couldn't call it Red Meat Island? It has to be Blackberry Island? So there will be more recipes for next year. But, yeah, they're fun, especially with berries coming in season because they do grow here.
Have you cooked any of these recipes? I'm looking at one that was sent to me, oven-baked pork chops with blackberry chipotle sauce.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Oh, you need to try it. It's fabulous.
From what I could tell, it's a wonderful recipe, so I'm going to have to try that. I like pork chops, so an oven-baked
Well, and the sauce works on almost anything. If you want to try it on chicken or even salmon, it's really nice. It's that spicy sweet sauce. So, yeah, it's really good. And the bramble fizz, I can't remember exactly what it's called right now, but, yeah, that's nice. My assistant is very dedicated, and she will decide to develop a cocktail for the website. And it might take her 3 or 4 nights of trying to get it right, but she perseveres. And it's like, you're so dedicated. So, yeah, we have a good time. We have a terrific time.
So do you cook a lot?
I cook some. The more I'm on deadline, the less I cook. So in between books, I cook quite a bit. As I get closer to my deadlines, I cook less and less. We do a lot of takeout, or we go out, or frozen, or my husband actually has never, no, he doesn't cook. So when I'm in between is when I do the experimenting. And then the first part of a book, which involves a lot of pacing until I get the rhythm of the story going. And then once I'm really into the book, then, yeah, it's lean cuisine for him.
Are you as creative in the kitchen as you are at the writing table?
No, not even close. I like it, and I have spurts of it, but no, I don't mind spending 10 hours getting a scene right. I am not going to spend, I lose attention in the kitchen, which is why I will start recipes and then send them to Janelle and say, I feel there's potential here, and she finds what's wrong and fixes it, and it's like, this is what you need to do. It's like, thank you. So, yeah, she's the patient chef, not me.
Interesting. Coming back to the book, being that this is the first of the series, and you just said that you have finished book 2, I presume, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more. Can you give us a sneak peek of where you're going with the story as far as what the theme is going to be going on forward?
Well, I can tell you the theme is going to be finding family, because that's what I always do. The next book is about three women. There's a hill. And one of the things we have that's sort of unique to this geographical area is we have houses built by sea captains for their family, because before Seattle was settled, before lumber or timber was king, the sea was king. So there are houses. Most people think they're Victorian, but they're actually Queen Anne houses in several communities on the Sound. So on my fictitious island, I have a hill with three houses next to each other. The houses are called the Three Sisters. And each of these houses is owned by a woman. Two of them have been living there a long time. In the middle one, the house is very run down. It's actually quite the disaster. And the heroine who buys it is also at a bad place in her life. So she has decided if she can fix this house, she can fix her life. And not really a good plan, because they are, in fact, unrelated. But so she moves into this middle house, and the three women find their way to, in fact, being like sisters for each other. And Carly and Michelle both make an appearance in the book.
Interesting. Is that going to be an ongoing character, so to speak, going down in book three, four?
They will show up, yes. I'm leaning towards, I haven't started the book for next year yet. And, okay, so let's see how this works. The book I just finished will be out in 2013. So I'm always a year ahead, which is why I never know what year it is. So it's hard for me. I have to look at my computer to write a check. So I'm writing now for 2013. So that will be Three Sisters. And then in 2014, I'm going to do something with, I'm not sure. I'm thinking of a love potion. That's as far as I got. Was, huh, that would be interesting. So I don't know. I have to
With a little touch of blueberries in it.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and the sauce.
That sounds very tasty and very inviting. Where can someone go to get more information about you, buy your book, and keep up with your latest happenings?
I have a website, Susan Mallory, MALLERY.com, and it's a very active website. It will link you to everything. There's tons of recipes. There's free things. There's short stories. There's hot links to buy all the books. If readers want to know when I have a book out, because I do 4 to 5 books a year. I write at a fairly big, fast clip. No one told me at the beginning. Real writers don't write fast. By the time I found out, I was like 3 years into it, and I thought, okay, too late to change now. So I have a members only where I send out an email postcard saying, the book's in stores today. And that's pretty much all you're going to hear from me. I know I have writer friends who do these wonderful newsletters. They're charming and funny, and it's like by the time I'm done writing for the day, there's nothing left. So I'm sorry there won't be a charming newsletter, but I will tell you when a book is out, and you will get 4 books a year from me. So that's I think, a fair trade. And I'm very active on Facebook. We do a lot on Facebook. In fact, you can tell how much I'm writing by how active I am on Facebook that day. But we do a lot of fun things. Readers have named characters for me. They've named businesses for me. And a lot of times when I'm asking for help, if they name a first name, if I pick the first name they suggested, I will use their last name as the last name for the character. So we do things like that. It's pretty fun.
How long have you been doing that? Because that's one of the questions I was going to ask you in terms of engaging your readers, which is quite interesting because now they are part of what you write. And that's
they are part of what I write. I have a series. My romance series is set in a town called Fool's Gold, California. And so I do a trilogy every year set in Fool's Gold. So this year I have cowboys coming to Fool's Gold. It's amazing what exists in this tiny town. And so I asked for help from my readers on horses. I don't know. I used to ride as a kid. I just remember they're really big and they scared me. So they helped me. They gave me some great stories. So stories from my readers are influencing what happens with my horse. They named the horse. The horse's name is Qatar. He's an Arabian stallion. Everyone thinks he's vicious, but he falls madly in love with a heroine who's tiny and follows her around like a puppy. And he's an escape artist. So a reader offered me that. Mm-hmm. All kinds of things. I asked, there's a Christmas book this year, A Fool's Gold Christmas. The heroine's a dancer. So I put up dance sequences written and asked the dancers, does this make sense? And they came back and had a couple of suggestions. And then one of them said, yes, I just danced this in my dining room. It's great. So I am not in love with the new timeline on Facebook. I'm still confused by it. I feel like I'm missing things, but I assume they'll either change it or I will get used to it. But Facebook, it's almost daily. I would say it's at least weekly. We are doing something, and then you have to be patient because I am writing a year in advance. So what we do today on Facebook will show up in my book a year from now. But, yeah, my fans are a huge part of what I write. They make suggestions. I had a book out a couple years ago called Finding Perfect, and the hero is his name is Raul Moreno. He's a football player. And about 3 years before that, he was a teenager in a book I wrote called Sweet Talk. And then a reader wrote me and said, is Raul in your next book? And I wrote her back and I said, well, he would be if I was intelligent, but no. But he will be now. So it was a reader suggestion to have him grow up. And I thought, you know, he was a really cool guy at 18. I can only imagine what he is at 35. So he became a hero of my book because a reader suggested. I didn't think of it. She thought of it. So I do take reader suggestions. It is I love social media. I love the interaction because writing is solitary. It's me and a dog alone in a room for 10 hours a day. So the social media allows me to be in everybody's house with them, but not in a scary way. And we have a great time. I'll ask random questions, you know, turn to page 37 of the book you're reading. What's the first line? And I mean, that's silly stuff, but it's just fun. It is part of a community, and I don't have to shower that morning, and I still get to go. So that's fun.
I believe your ability to engage your readers in a more direct fashion and having their input in your book, I think that speaks volumes in what you're writing, and in this case, the connection that your readers have to everything that you put out there.
I hope so. I love it. I hope they like it too. And I mean, one of the things I've realized is I really have published over 100 novels. And you can't do that. That kind of longevity is not possible without readers who are extraordinarily supportive. And so I can't give back the way I would like to because it's just not physically possible. But through the social interaction, I feel like we are our own community and we are friends with each other. And when I have public appearances, we sort the database and send out to people who are within 100 miles. And some of them come and meet me, and I get to actually meet them in person, which is, I mean, that's fun. Going on book tour is not very interesting. It's a lot of travel, and it's exhausting. But I get to meet people I've spoken to sometimes for years, and that just makes it wonderful. I mean, it's it's like going to meet a friend. Even though we've never met, we have a connection. As I said, literally sometimes we've been talking for years through email or Facebook or whatever. So it's a wonderful thing.
Are you theme-driven or are you reader-driven?
I am theme-driven. I definitely write the Finding Home book. However, I do have a specific reader in mind, and I have had her in my head for a long time. It was an amalgamation of emails I received. Back in the day, I used to get fan mail and real letters. And the writer I picture in my mind is, she's married, she has three kids, her husband is out of town, it's very specific, her husband is out of town, her kids have had the stomach flu, and her washing machine broke. And tomorrow, the husband comes home, the washer gets fixed, her kids are finally feeling better, She gets in the bathtub with a glass of wine and my book, and she has 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And my job is to take her away mm-hmm. from all that she's been through. And that is my only job. And so when I'm crabby or I don't feel good or I don't know what to say next in the book, I mm-hmm. think about her, and I have a responsibility to her. I need to dazzle her for that hour. So that's who I think about when I write. When it gets hard, I remind mm-hmm. myself, this isn't about me. This is about her.
Interesting. Very interesting. Throughout your career, do you have any mentors that helped you out along the way?
Oh, I've had some wonderful mentors. I think that one of the things that is unique to the romance industry is it is, I think, the only publishing group that is all women. The publishers are women, the editors are women, the agents are women, the writers are women, the readers are women. So we're very different. our conferences are very different than mm-hmm. a business conference. My husband's like, there's no hugging at my conference. We don't hug. We shake hands and step
That's
away.
Right.
I said, there's lots of sometimes there's even cheek kissing at our conference. He's like, no, we don't do that. My husband's a former engineer. He's an executive. But he's like, no one kisses at the conference. and it's very loud and it's very shrill. But I think that we are more nurturing.
Yeah.
And there's it seems like it's always been very, very giving. I would say one of my closest and most wonderful mentors is Debbie Maycomber. I mm-hmm. met her in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
We were both 12. She was multi-published with Silhouette at the time, and I had just started with them, and she was a rock star even then and very kind and has been wonderfully supportive to me mm-hmm. to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a big meeting, and Debbie's the one I called and said, okay, what do I do? Tell me what to do. Tell me what to ask. So, and there have been others, but Debbie's definitely the queen of my mentors.
Wonderful. Debbie is just a wonderful lady. She was on my show a couple of years ago, and it was very interesting. Yeah,
she is, and she is as warm and lovely in person.
Yeah. Yeah.
If any of your listeners get a chance to go to a signing and meet her, you will find her as genuine as you imagine. She's lovely.
Her life story was quite interesting, and I'm sure yours too, which is very interesting. And coming back to that, I was going to ask you, do you have anyone else in your family that writes?
I do not. I'm the only one. I'm also the only one with curly hair, and we're trying to decide if there's a link. No, nobody else writes. I am pretty typical mm-hmm. that I have cousins, and my cousins and I, we are the first generation in our family. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of my aunts went to college, but aside from that, mm-hmm. we are the first generation to where all of us went to college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was unheard of before in our family. My parents were immigrants,
mm-hmm.
and so not a surprise. But it was, it's interesting. But no, there are no writers. I have scientists, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I have cousins
mm-hmm.
who are scientists, and a little bit scary.
Your conference is the one that I need to crash because it's all women, right?
Oh, it's a fun conference. It's really, it's huge. It's about 2,000 women. There's a literacy signing, which is fabulous. It's this year it's in Anaheim. It's the last week of July. So if anybody's going to be in the Anaheim area, the Wednesday night is the literacy signing at the convention center. All the proceeds go to literacy. The publishers donate the books. There's about 600 published authors, so anybody you'd want to see in romance will be there. And mm-hmm. they sign books, and it's a great chance to meet with them. And then throughout the weekend, there's workshops. You have to sign up for the conference to attend the other events, but everyone is welcome to the literacy signing. But there's probably 300 workshops on writing over 2.5 days.
That's
awesome.
It's
quite extraordinary. Yeah, it's very intense.
This is wonderful news for men. I mean, that's how you show that you have heart.
I will say most of them are married and focused. So this is probably if that's what you're for, this might not be the conference for you. There are a couple guys there are some men who are trying to write romance, so they come as well. There are a couple of agents who are men and a couple of editors who are men, but not a lot.
Interesting.
They stand out. Oh, and the sad part for the men, we take over their bathrooms.
There's
all the men's bathrooms, there's a sign that says, you know, for this weekend only, ladies. So, yes, it's very hard for a man to find a restroom at a romance writers convention. I'm just giving you a heads up.
We are the minority then.
You become the minority. Somewhere on the fourth floor tucked in a corner is a small restroom for the men's use. Otherwise, no.
Interesting. As an accomplished author, what advice can you give to new writers who are just starting out?
I have one piece of advice I give consistently, and that is don't give up. It's really some small measure of talent is required, but the majority of authors who make it, who are successful, are simply the most tenacious. No publisher will come to your door and knock and say, "We understand you have a brilliant idea. You need to write the book and send it out, and you need to not give up." The author who doesn't give up is the one who will get her book published. Now, today with self-publishing, it's a whole different world, and I don't know how that's going to shake out. I will say self-publishing is not a field of dreams. If you publish it, they will not come because they can't find it. For every, I believe, Shades of Grey was self-published, there's a million people who've sold 5 copies of their book. So that is a difficult road. It can be very, very successful, but there's a lot more to publishing than writing a book. There's a lot of promotion, and the people I'm friends with who are successfully self-publishing are promoting themselves. It's about a 2-to-1 ratio. They spend 2 hours of promotion for every hour they spend writing, which would make me insane. I'm really bad at it. So, but if you want to be published more traditionally, either through an e-publisher or through a New York publisher, it's about tenacity. Don't give up, as in most things in life. The ones who win are the ones who don't give up.
Are there still similarities of things that apply 20 years ago now?
I think there are. A lot has changed. We now have cell phones. But I think at the heart, fiction for me is about the emotions. If you want to learn about Italy, you read a book on Italy. Whether it's a thriller where the world's going to be saved or a whodunit mystery where you are defeated by tenacity or a romance where true love conquers all, popular fiction is about how the books make us feel. The setting is window dressing. It's the emotional journey we want to go on. And I think the emotional journey has stayed the same. I don't think people at their heart have changed very much. The pace is a little bit different. The subject matter is different. The mores of society are different. But we all still want to feel good about ourselves. We want to feel that we belong. We have a sense of community. Most people are looking for an emotional commitment, and that has stayed the same. So the heart of the book is the same, but the stories certainly evolve and are more current than they were 20 years ago. And I think the biggest thing that has changed is truly pacing. Books are much faster paced now than they used to be. I blame Twitter. I used to be, they would say, "Oh, you've got a chapter to hook your reader." And, "Oh, you've got 10 pages to hook your reader." Now when I talk to unpublished people, you have a page. At the bottom of the page, one of two things is going to happen. If they're in a bookstore, they're going to walk with the book to the cash register or they're going to put it back. If they're on an e-reader, they're either going to buy the book or delete the sample. But we have one page to capture our readers. And it's not even a full page because, as you know, the first page starts halfway down.
Right.
That's how long I have to convince you you need to read this book. And that has changed. So you need a really good first page. And you make a promise on the first page, and you better deliver.
How about men? Do you find more men are reading romance novel now than before?
No, not really. It's really not a genre that most men enjoy. Mm-hmm. They don't have the connection feelings we do. They don't have that sense of community. They're not looking for this, and that's fine. Women are most of the readers, so I'm very comfortable with that. No, I still get scary letters from men in prison. if you ever get a letter, ladies, if you ever get a letter written in pencil with a long number after the return address name, do not open it. It's from someone in prison. Yeah, I don't. Just right into the shredder. And then I wash my hands. A few. I get men who read them because it's like, my wife's been reading you for 10 years, and I just, I had to find out what all the fuss was about. And then there's a moment where I take it in the spirit it's meant, but it's always hysterical. And they look at me with genuine shock and say, you know, it wasn't bad. I'm like, thank you. I will embroider that on a pillow. And like my husband, I write 4 or 5 books a year. He reads one a year, and I'm fine with that. It's not his thing. But he's very sweet, and he does read it, and then we talk about it, and I tell him which one I think he'll like the most. And so that's the one, and he will download it on his e-reader, which is, it's like, honey, do you know we have author copies in my, no, I want to buy it like everyone, thank you. So he does buy the book on his e-reader, which is very supportive.
Coming back to Barefoot Season, to me, it's not just about romance. Because
it's not.
Yeah, so to me personally, I enjoyed reading it because it's sort of information. It's out there. This is real life, real situation. And something that people could relate to, my neighbor or my sister or my mom or relatives. I mean, it's not just the pure romance kind of typical romance novel.
I agree. It is not. It is a little bit broader. And then I did not plan for it to be timely, but it is, with Michelle being the veteran. And I'm really glad. I don't generally write, you know, ripped from the headlines kind of books, so this is more serendipitous. But I'm really glad that we're focusing on the returning veterans right now, and I'm glad to have something to contribute to the conversation with Barefoot Season. And to me, the best part of this is the women soldiers I asked to read it and their reaction. And I mentioned a couple of them in the dedication, those who helped me. But I am pleased to be one voice telling their story. That's just an honor for me. And as I said, not something I generally get to do in my career, so it's very touching to have that happen.
Well, what you're doing is a great thing, because what happens is that when the war is over, when it's not covered by the 6 o'clock news or 7 o'clock news, it's over. And now it's in print. And obviously, this is real-life situations. People can read it and relate to it. And every so often, it will surface up and have people to start thinking about it again. And that's important.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I hope so. I do think that there are stories that should be told, and told in almost a gentle way, where you really you get to go on the journey with them, and it's not sort of crammed down your throat. And I'm appreciative that people are responding to the story. That's why I write it. I want to make people obviously enjoy the book and have it speak to them emotionally. So that it's doing that is very gratifying.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
I would say my recipe for living is what we've talked about. It's to try to be authentic, even though it's scary, and to be tenacious. I'm a big believer in, and people have said this 1,000 times, showing up. Showing up is so important, because sometimes you're the only one there, and hey, then you win. You know, if you're the only one who bothers to do the work, then you get to reap the reward. So I think it's important for people to really think about what they want, what is important to them, and to pursue that authentically. And it doesn't always have to be huge. You know, little dreams still make the world sparkle. Not everybody's going to go to Mars, and that's okay. You know, some of us have to be here to in my case, endlessly buy flowers that I know I'm going to kill. I mean, we all have our place. And so I would say live authentically and be tenacious.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Wonderful recipe for living. How has being a writer impacted you personally?
It has totally changed my life. I have not had a real job since college, which has changed how I live.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. I get to experience so many different things through my characters and through the people I meet through my writing. I have just been very, very blessed. And I live in my head, which is sometimes a dark and scary place. but it is so who I am. I can't imagine not telling stories. Being a writer has allowed me to fulfill what I was meant to do. It has allowed me to be the person I was supposed to be. So I am very, very grateful. And I've met a wonderful community of all my friends are writers, and it's been a great community. And I'm just very fortunate. I'm very, very blessed, and I'm very grateful for the blessing, because I wouldn't be happy doing anything else. I think people who don't get to do what they were meant to do, there's always an emptiness, and that would be very sad to live with.
That's very true. Any final thoughts about Barefoot Season?
You can read the first chapter for free on the website. I would encourage your listeners to give it a try, and if they like it, there's a buy link, but you no obligation. I'm a big believer in try before you buy, whether it's chocolate or a book. You should always get a sample. And I would just encourage them to go out and commit a random act of kindness today. Just make somebody smile.
Very interesting. That's wonderful. Well, Susan, thank you very much for the great recipe for living that you have shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be author Joanne Bender. Her latest novel, titled Lesbian Born, chronicles Adolf Hitler's secret program of breeding a master race of Aryan children during World War II. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. And Susan, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.